I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast.
Speaker Nation, welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni, and as always, super excited to have you here so you can take your speaking to a whole nother level and make a bigger impact on the world. And I've got somebody here who has been doing it. He's out on the beat, out on stages, making a bigger impact. His name's Chris Baldwin. He is a bit of everything. And what I mean by that, he was born in Vanuatu, grew up in Australia, where I am based, and is now in the Netherlands. And he was named one of the fastest growing speakers in 2018 and the number one speaker in the Netherlands. And he charges up to an excess of $15,000 for each keynote engagement. And so we're going to delve into that and a whole lot more, because he's been the speaker of choice for places like Google and Microsoft and a lot of other Fortune 500 companies. And we're going to also have an insight into the mindset that it takes to be able to grow that fast and also be an effective speaker to your audience. So with all that being said, welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks, Victor. Thanks for having me.
So let's get a bit of a slight background into you. You're obviously grown massively in your speaking space last year and this year. What are you speaking about, and I guess what gives you the credibility to speak to different audiences?
So speaking has been something of I took on recently. Like, I've only really been speaking professionally for a year and speaking for 2 years. And the first year was actually within my organization. It was within IPG, which is one of the big five media companies in the world, IPG Media Brand specifically. And I started... Actually, where it all started was I was tasked as a strategy director. I was tasked with building the new mission vision for the agency, like the next chapter. And I had to communicate this internally. So I started speaking internally. And one of the requirements I gave to people is that they needed to present this themselves. And a lot of people had trouble presenting it. And so I started to train people to speak internally within my organization to present the mission vision themselves so that they could bring this up in pitches, client pitches. And then just one thing led to another, and all of a sudden I started being tagged as the speaker within my agency. And I started being asked to go into industry podiums and actually present on digital marketing. And then that's how it all started. And what I did was I built a model called Meaningful Connections. I made it up. I woke up at 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning, and within 40 minutes, I had this model written out. It's basically the steps on how to build customer happiness, and it's a four-step process, and it's a model that describes sort of the digital ecosystem we're in and how to build relationships through this digital ecosystem, and I call it Meaningful Connections. You know, in a hyper-connected world, people would seek out the Meaningful Connections. And so what I did, I actually made something up that nobody else had. And that actually was a ticket to the podium, because all of a sudden, like, companies like Facebook, who are all about meaningful social interactions, they don't want to put the word connections in there because they don't want to be responsible for you connecting. They bring you closer together. But also Google and Microsoft played a big role in getting me to the stage, because the first one I did for Microsoft back in 2016, where I talked about meaningful connections, I made them look good from the stage without being salesy, and they loved it. And since then, I got invited back at least 15 times by Microsoft to speak on stages. So that's how it all started, from within my organization.
And talk about, you've obviously had a rapid growth side of your speaking, you know, over the last 18 months. How did you, I guess, you know, Microsoft is an awesome name to have, you know, I've presented to them and, you know, they've given me rave reviews. How were you able to leverage, and how have you been able to grow yourself as a speaker and a brand?
So, you know, there's a lot of different things I can say on this question. I think looking back at the last couple of years, especially the last year, and what helped me to grow so quickly, at the core of it, it's the ability to communicate through digital, the ability to leverage video. Video. Like literally, when you give content from the stage, unless you record it in some form, it disappears. And as soon as you put it into a video or into an audio and you share it on your social profiles like LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram, people start to recognize you as a speaker. And they may not care too much for the keynote, but it builds your brand as a speaker. It tags you as a speaker. And all these people, your followers, your friends, your colleagues, are within organizations. And these organizations, they organize events. Mm. They sponsor events. And so when you can sort of brand yourself as a speaker, then all of a sudden you become top of mind for them when the question pops up, who should we invite to speak at this event? Bam. And then they reach out to you on social media. And I think at the core, the ability to put it into video and to share it with your social following, that is at the core of how to grow quickly in this ecosystem now. We're all hyper-connected. We're all consuming from social media to create opportunities for yourself.
And I imagine at times it's an invisible ROI. Like it's that, yeah, you're putting these out here and then you're not necessarily cold calling or cold reaching out to these different organizations to speak. I'm sure there's times that you may or may not, but with that, have you been able to pinpoint, like if you were to 80-20, a social media platform that you were getting the best results on? Is it LinkedIn because there's the professionals? Is it Instagram because videos get eaten up? Is it YouTube? Like, or is it just get them out to all of them?
So in the beginning, I had no idea. Now I do know. And I can tell you that it's LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Those are the three platforms and they perform equally well. LinkedIn is much more a professional platform. All the people from my past organizations are there. With Facebook, the difference is that there's a lot of people there that don't know you and a lot of family and friends are there, so they'll support you as well. And the funny thing is with Instagram is that I have like the people that look at stuff and like stuff and comment on stuff, they are sometimes like the exact people I need to be communicating with. And they might, it's top of funnel. They might not invite you for a gig then, but they know what you're doing. Hmm. And you're inspiring them. And it's top of feed, top of mind. This is what I call it. Like you need to be engaging with them, chatting with them. As soon as you chat with someone on any of these platforms, bam, you're in their feeds for the next 3 days or 7 days, depending. So you need to be engaging with them in a valuable way and appearing in their feeds. And I think they're all good. The only one that's really dying is Twitter. Unless you're in an event and you're using the hashtag, and Twitter's only relevant when you're in the event. Yeah. I haven't been able to leverage Twitter successfully outside of events.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's that 7 minutes and then it's never to be seen again. And yeah, it's a horrible place. So we'll leave that in the burning heap. When it comes to your speaking events, so you've obviously spoken at Google and Microsoft and these large companies. A lot of the guests that we've had on here, some of them are running their wares and speaking at stage after stage. And then I feel like the ones that have best leveraged themselves, they've found a way to be able to transform keynote presentations into customers or into something off the back of it, whether that be some sort of consulting to their organization after the fact, whether it be high-level training to their C-level executives, licensing courses, whatever it may be. Have you managed to find a way with these larger corporations and have you gained any insights if you have?
Absolutely. So I always work my way backwards. When I'm designing a keynote, I start with the end in mind. Like what's my strategic objectives? Like, what do I want to get out of this? Like, it's not just about turning up and checking the box I've spoken. It's about why am I speaking in the first place? Like, what is the goal? What do I want to achieve from the hour that I'm going to be on stage? And on the one side, it's a message you're delivering, right? Like I speak a lot on digital transformation. It's a very relevant topic now. A lot of organizations need to transform and really gain the ability to communicate more effectively through a digital ecosystem. That's the meaningful connection story. That's fine. I'll inspire them with that. But that's one of the reasons I'm there. It's not the only reason I'm there. The other reason I'm there is that maybe I want to be rebooked for another event. Maybe I want to speak at their global summit for that particular company. Maybe I want to be a trainer in communication for them. Maybe I want to help them, craft and deliver better pitches. Maybe I want them to buy my book because I'm writing a book, which is going to come out later this year. So all these things, these are all goals and ambitions that you have. And when you work your way backwards, you start with your strategic objectives. And then when you're crafting your keynote, which is basically just a bunch of stories that are making points. And these stories and points add up to the message or the messages you'll be sending to the audience. And so when you select your stories and when you drop your points, you're actually in line with your strategic objectives. So one nice example is Accenture. One of the biggest management consulting companies in the world, 500,000 people globally. They invited me to do a keynote for them at one of their QBRs, a quarterly business reviews. There were about 70 high-level consultants in the Netherlands. The managing director of Accenture was in the room. He was in the room watching. And I delivered a 30-minute keynote. Of those 70 people, 40 people came up to me afterwards saying thank you, shaking my hand. I got to spend the last 2 hours of the event with the managing director because he liked the keynote. It was meaningful connections. And at the end, they invited me to present at their global summit because that's one of the things I wanted. They have a global summit on AI later this year. But what was really interesting is that I built in two or three very personal stories into my keynote, which got people quite emotional. So 2 months later, what did they do? They reached out to me asking me to, would I be their storytelling trainer? It was a strategic objective. I want to train Accenture and their clients in being able to speak, to pitch through effective storytelling and compelling storytelling, because through stories, you're able to arouse emotion, and that's how people remember, through emotions. And so that's one of the things, like, just work your way backwards, figure out what do you want out of this event, what do you want out of this organization, and build those strategic objectives into your keynote. And then you can't control the outcome. All you can control is the process. So deliver. If you don't like the outcome you get, we'll change the process. Just iterate for the next time. But what you'll see is very quickly after a few iterations, you'll start to get what you want. These things that you're trying to achieve will start to come back to you because you're building them into your keynotes.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest message I personally took out of that is if you're not getting the result that you want, iterate. Like, yeah, start with the end in mind. It makes perfect sense. You can see how many other avenues you can potentially go down, and particularly with these big companies that do have these. It doesn't have to be a big company. It can still be a small one. Hey, I'm going to give I've been invited to personally speak at an insurance company in New Zealand to their team. Again, my outcome, my objective is to then be invited back to all their hubs to train their teams on how they can present to groups rather than, one-to-one sales. And that's the end outcome that I intend to make off this back end. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But if it doesn't, I'm going to be going, okay, what could I have done potentially differently to bring that outcome in? So I appreciate that from a learning perspective.
Let me go a little bit deeper there, because I've got a couple of tips that really will make the difference for most speakers speaking within corporations. And it's something that generally you don't think about. When you're negotiating a deal with a corporate, sometimes they'll pay you, sometimes they won't. Like sometimes they'll say, hey, this is an opportunity for us to get to hear your message. come and deliver it. If we like it, well, we may work together. And you'll say, yes, well, I'll gladly give it for free.
Yeah.
Or you'll say, well, listen, I'm a professional speaker. Generally, I speak for, 6,000-7,000 a podium. In this particular case, I want to build a relationship with you. I'm willing to discount and come in at cost, $1,500. However, so if they agree, oh, we'll take you in at $1,500, that's okay. We have a budget for that. And they're getting you at a severe discount. Now you've got leverage. You've got leverage. And what you need to do is always build in value for that leverage. And that is, for example, understand, so what do you want out of that organization? And who are the key stakeholders? Who are the decision makers within the organization? And ask to have coffee with them. Ask to have lunch with them. Ask to have dinner with them. Like literally go in for the ask. You say, I'll speak for $1,500 if I can have lunch with your head of HR. If I can have lunch with the head of learning and development. If I can have dinner with your head of innovation, these are all things that I've done. So tomorrow, for example, I'm flying to Luxembourg and I'm the speaker coach for 200 people in Luxembourg for the largest law firm in the Benelux. And I did a keynote for them last year. I was the plein air keynote speaker, main stage, 1,200 people. It was a global summit in Amsterdam, rock star podium. And I happened to come across the head of HR during the event. And so I sat next to her and we had lunch together. And in French, because I'm also French. And so that we got a really special bond. And then within 4 weeks, she reached out to me saying, hey, let's talk. We're wanting to upgrade our learning and development program for presentation skills. Will you help us with that? And so now I build learning and development programs for this law firm, both for presentation skills and client communications. And so identify the key stakeholders that you need to influence and make sure that when you're talking to the event manager, make sure you build those into the contract that you have.
And when it comes to your outreach, obviously sitting with these key stakeholders is the best outcome you can possibly have rather than sending this cold email out to them going, hey, do you remember me from a few weeks ago when I spoke on a stage, or hey, I spoke at a different company's stage a few weeks ago. I'd love to share something to your team. What does it look like for you now for reaching out to companies versus nurturing the current relationships from the stages that you've already spoken from?
So this may come as a surprise, but I've done no outreach. I don't do it. Yeah. I've done no outreach. So within my fourth month of speaking, I was fully booked, over 20,000 in revenue. And in the fifth month, I was the fastest growing speaker in the Netherlands. And in month six, I was number one on the top 10 list for the Netherlands. And I never did any outreach. And what I did was I did get an agent. And my second mindset is make your speaker agent as successful as possible. My whole goal was to actually make him as successful as possible. Everything I did was in his best interest. And that built trust. Because what happens, so you've got to realize, as a starting speaker, you might be a thought leader within an organization. You have a powerful message. You have a mission to fulfill, and you have a purpose to fulfill. And it's all ready. All you need is now the audience to deliver it to. And you're thinking about the stage as a platform to deliver that. Now, your organization can get you to the stage. Maybe if you're recognized within your industry, you'll be able to speak within that industry. Not everyone has that fortune. If you're a good speaker, if you can get your speech on video, a speech good enough to inspire an agent to take you on, they have a network that is 100 times bigger than yours. And they have a network that actually... So speakers get sick, flights get delayed, speakers don't turn up, and the event managers need really quickly a speaker, often the next day. And so they reach out to agents because agents have a repertoire of speakers. So you need to, but the agent will also have like 10 speakers to pick from. Mm. Why should they pick you? This is a question you need to ask yourself. And this second mindset I had as a speaker was make my speaker agent as successful as possible. I wanted to always be top of mind for him so that when he presents three speakers, which is pretty well the maximum an agent will present, here's your choice of three, you need to be in that list. How are you going to make it to that list? And so I leveraged an agent in order to get to the podium, paid podiums. Agents will get you paid gigs. Your network, you'll be speaking for free. In the beginning, you'll be speaking for free because it's friends, it's colleagues. It's like, I do you a favor, you do me a favor, until you become in high demand. And then what you'll find is even your friends and your colleagues and your network will say, oh, Chris, I'd love you to speak at our next event. You know, we can't pay the fees that you're asking. Can you do something special for us? And that is when you come in with, I'll do it for $1,500, for $2,000, but I want lunch with this person, I want dinner with this person, and I want coffee with this person. With an agent, they have no interest in selling you in at $1,500. They'll sell you in at $7,000, $10,000 because they operate off commission. Let them do that work. And so I did no outreach.
Nice. It's a awesome insight because, I mean, you're getting on these stages, you're having great success. And it's that 80-20. It's how can you do what you're best at, which is speaking, and obviously creating these meaningful connections in person and leveraging off someone who's already made a lot of these meaningful connections, you know, throughout a speaking agency. When you were saying, and it really caught my interest, you want to stay... make your speaking agent as successful as possible. You want to, yeah, so that if there's that last minute thing, that last minute event that needs filling, that they're going to put you forward. Have you had any situations where like a speaker has been pulled or hasn't been able to make it or whatever from any type of event?
All the time. All the time. Most of my gigs have come because someone else couldn't make it. So this is my third mindset as a speaker. So I've got seven mindsets. This is a decision-making framework for me. It helps me make decisions quickly, and that helps me move quickly. And my third mindset is always have a no problems attitude. And because what happens, the event managers, they're full of problems. There's problems all over the place. People complaining, speakers going over time, speakers not turning up, technology not working. When you can be the no problem speaker, You're a pleasure to work with. Oh my God, Chris will, Chris spoke this morning. A speaker's not turning up this afternoon. Chris, could you do a second keynote and talk about something different? I'll say no problem, and I'll get on stage. You know, when you have this no problems attitude, what happens is that event managers start to reach out to you because they want to work with you again. And same as your agent, when you have a no problems attitude, like, they contact you in the morning. Can you do a keynote this afternoon? Like someone's like desperate, no problem. And you just turn up and you deliver a compelling keynote because you're prepared for that. You already have those keynotes ready. And then you become the no problem speaker. And a lot of these, the beauty about stepping in at the last minute is that you can charge a premium. Mm-hmm. So if you're booking 3 months ahead of time, 6 months ahead of time, they're considering other speakers and they'll often do a price consideration. But if you have to speak the next day, man, you can charge 2-3 times as much. And the agent knows that. And the event manager hasn't got a choice. And so it's a great place to be, last minute speaker. And it's basically one of the reasons why I grew so quickly last year. One of the examples is my TED Talk. So I told my agent, I want to do a TED talk, a TEDx talk. Ultimately, I want to do a TED talk, but that's why I'm calling it TED talk instead of TEDx, because it's just a manifestation of what I will do later. But it was a TEDx, and I'd just come back from a speaking trip in Miami and Vienna, and I fell ill and I was sick in bed on the Monday, on the Tuesday, and on the Wednesday, my agent calls me, would you like to do a TED talk? And I go, yeah, great. When? And he goes, tomorrow. And I had to move really quickly now because two speakers at the TEDx University of Amsterdam were sick. They had a speaker lineup, two speakers were sick, and people buy tickets to these things. So they needed to fill the spots. Otherwise, people aren't getting the value that they're expecting. And I was one of those considerations, but I had to move really quickly. So within 20 minutes, I had to decide and say yes. But remember, I was sick. I had, my voice was at 60%. I had aches in my joints. I literally had the flu and a throat infection. But I said, no problem. And when I called the event manager, they said, I'm just giving you the shorter version of this story. They said the theme was crossing borders. And I speak about technology and relationships. Mm. And so I went to bed without a story. Like, I'm thinking, oh my God, how am I going to talk within the theme of crossing borders? So I set my alarm the next morning at 5 a.m. And by 7 a.m., I had my story. It was all crafted out in my speech map. And basically, I thought, technology. What better topic to talk about than technology? I mean, technology disrespects borders. It dematerializes them. It makes them irrelevant in most cases, only to the level of the regulation you impose upon the technology or the rules you code into it. And it was a perfect topic for crossing borders. And so I delivered that keynote. I prepared it in the morning. I delivered it in the afternoon. It went on YouTube. It went viral. And that has been one of the catalysts for me. Most of my gigs now are coming through my TED Talk. You know, sometimes you're just one talk away from your next opportunity. Like, you're one talk away from changing everything in your speaking career. However, if you don't put it on video, no one's going to remember. And then you've only reached a linear audience, and that's the people you spoke to on that day. When you put it on video, you keep speaking to other people forever, as long as it's online.
And it comes back to the first point you made today, is video.
Yeah.
is the way that you grew your speaking, and then if you're not getting these engagements onto video, then like you say, the linear audience, you've got this chance to even have these bite-sized snippets that people can relate to and go, oh, well, that was 15 seconds or 30 seconds out of what looks like a very long presentation, a 30, 60, 90 minute presentation. Well, this person must know what they're talking about, and I'd be interested to hear more. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Look, Chris, we've got to wrap up today, but I would love to jump on again and have a chat about these seven different mindsets, because it's something that we haven't necessarily approached in the podcast. And I think for a lot of people looking to transition and leverage up in their speaking, it could be super valuable. So I want to leave it there. And for everybody who is hooked like I am today, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, grab all of the show notes, everything we've talked about, all these tips and tricks, as well as some links where you can find Chris, which we'll discuss a bit more in the next episode, which you're not going to miss, because we're going to talk about Chris's seven mindsets to become a successful and sought after speaker. So thanks for this, and I'll chat to you very, very shortly.
Thanks, Victor. Thanks for having me on, and speak to you next time.
If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.